Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and live online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. You might know Stephen Van Zandt as Silvio Dante, the mob consigliere and owner of the Bada Bing strip club in the HBO series The Sopranos. Then again, you might know him as the longtime guitarist in Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band, who made his mark on Springsteen records like Born to Run and on a number of his own solo albums. And you might even know him from the nationally syndicated radio show Little Steven's Underground Garage, which celebrates garage rock and similar rock subgenres. This fall, he's presenting a national concert tour based on that program, and it comes to Irving Plaza here in Manhattan on Thursday night. Stephen Van Zandt joins us on Soundcheck from his studios here in New York. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
How are you, John?
Okay. We were having a good time earlier this morning going through your website, the crew and I, and, you know, there's like a page on politics, there's a page on Buddhism, there's a real sense of mission, you know, like things that you're really enthusiastic and excited about. You like to share those enthusiasms with others. Is that same sense of mission driving the whole garage rock thing as well?
Yeah. It really is. I mean, it started off as just a sort of a selfish kind of enterprise where I was trying to get my favorite records on the radio again, you know.
And I know how that works.
I realized, you know, as I very innocently went to the syndicators and said, "Listen, I got a little idea for a little radio show." And they said, "Is it rock and roll?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, we can't get rock and roll on the radio anymore." You know, at that point, it went from being this sort of casual, you know, sort of fun thing to a mission. Because I realized the state of radio was very, very different from when I grew up, and I hadn't been paying that close attention to it.
You know? So in fact, as strange as this may seem to say, rock is something that needs somebody with a sense of activism to put it out there.
Well, I'm afraid so. I didn't realize that myself. You know, I kind of, you know, I spent, I don't know, 10, 12 years doing nothing but politics and in the 80s and into the early 90s and put that aside. You know, I kind of learned what I needed to learn and said what I needed to say. And so I wasn't particularly looking for any kind of, you know, any kind of political issue here. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to have some fun for a change, and look at what happens, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but I realized, you know, we have a generation or two of kids that unless we do something right now, they're never going to hear or be able to have any access to what we grew up calling rock and roll.
Right.
And that I couldn't live with that. I just found that intolerable personally, because I do take rock and roll very, very seriously, even though our show is mostly about fun. We take our fun very seriously.
Sure.
You know?
And is that the idea behind the rock and roll show tour this fall?
Yes, this is an extension of it. I mean, we've grown now from 20 stations to over 200, you know, the two-hour show. Mm-hmm. Is now in 200 markets and over a million listeners. So the radio show is doing quite well. We also have a two channels on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Right.
And now it's time to start playing live, because rock and roll is something that needs to be seen live, unlike, you know, hip-hop or pop or to some extent the other kind of music that we get on MTV these days. it needs to be seen live, experienced live, and we found an opportunity now. It's a different world in the sense that our relationship with sponsors now is critical, and that wasn't the case growing up. I mean, the sponsors were kind of the enemy in a sense. They'd always give the money to the bands that didn't need it, and now that's been a complete paradigm shift and a very important one, I think, for the future of rock and roll. It's going to be very much dependent on people like Rolling Rock and AT&T's Blue Room, who have allowed us to now take this 5 bands around the country to 20 cities, and we'll do it September, October, and November. Mm-hmm. 5 different bands each tour, you know.
And those bands include, you know, contemporary groups like the Mooney Suzuki and the Woggles, but also your headliners are the Zombies from way back in the 60s. We're speaking with Stephen Van Zandt, who has put together both the syndicated radio show Little Stephen's Underground Garage and this national concert tour that comes here on Thursday night to Irving Plaza, and featuring the Zombies. Of the season, when love runs high, in this time, give it to me easy. Let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for love. All right, the time of the season, big hit for the Zombies back in the 60s. Little Stephen Van Zandt, my guest on Soundcheck. Your show is called Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and you really have sort of championed garage rock. That, to me, doesn't sound... I mean, that's more coming out of the parlor floor than the garage.
Well, we have a very wide tent. we're not elitist about our primitive nature here. We use the word garage rock now, which you could substitute traditional rock and roll if you'd like. I mean, okay. they are you know, virtually the same thing. You know, basically a reverence for the 50s and 60s. Virtually all of it is included in garage rock culture. And, you know, the basic guitar, bass, and drums nature of it is the heart of it, but we include 60s pop music and the psychedelic era and mm-hmm. and girl groups and going back to the pioneers of the 50s even.
Well, now, when you rejoined Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band in the mid-70s, that was at the time that the Ramones and the whole punk thing was starting here in New York. That, I mean, those guys literally were, you know, making it in their garages. Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? Were you aware of that then? Did you see the E Street Band as, in its own way, a kind of a garage band as well?
Well, that's where the term comes from. I mean, February 8th, 1964, there were no bands in America, none. And February 9th, the Beatles, a group from England, came over and played a variety show called Ed Sullivan. And that February 9th, 1964, 73 million people were watching. Mm-hmm. In those days, people may find this hard to believe, but the entire family would watch one program.
And on February 10th, there were 3,000 bands in
exactly.
each town.
Exactly right. And in the suburbs, they were literally rehearsing in their garages, which is where the term comes from. And we were one of them, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody, we were in the suburbs at the time in New Jersey. And, everybody had a band. And most of them, you know, fortunately for the public, stayed in their garages. But, you know, a few of us actually wandered out and got gigs. And I had my band, and Bruce had his band. And there was probably, I don't know, 10 other bands in the area. Mm-hmm. Not that many. Not that many that actually made a living playing rock and roll as we did in the local joints. But
well, in your case, you had more than one band, because Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes and the E Street Band and stuff. So you had a lot of kind of experience with stuff other than the usual guitar, bass, and drums. I mean, I understand the horn arrangement of 10th Avenue Freeze Out on Springsteen's Born to Run, that was your idea.
Yeah, well, you know, we had a lot of different bands, as you say, and you know, we're trying to find ourselves. And in those days, the input was just amazing. Every couple of months, something new and extraordinary would happen, and we would go from being, you know, a folk rock band, and then we'd be a psychedelic band, then we'd be a blues band, you know, then we'd do a little jazz, then we'd have a country band, you know, and finally, by the mid-70s, we thought we have to create something new, and that wasn't easy to do anymore by the 70s, so we thought, let's have a rock band, but with rhythm and blues style horns.
Yeah.
And that was Southside John, the Asbury Jukes. So we had five horns in the band, and so I was used to arranging them. And then I happened to be at a session visiting Bruce while he was recording Born to Run. I hadn't actually joined that particular band yet, although we had many bands before that, going back 10 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, he had a little problem with the arrangement, and I happened to be there and went in there and just changed a few notes. But you know.
And added a whole slew of horns. Let's hear how the piece begins. This is Steven Van Zandt's arrangement from Bruce Springsteen's 10th Avenue Freeze Out. All right, 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Bruce Springsteen. My guest, little Steven Van Zandt, coming up with the horn arrangement that is one of the most distinctive parts of that song. And he is also the host of Little Steven's Underground Garage. And Steven, first of all, in my neighborhood growing up, if you called somebody little or tiny or anything like that, it was inevitably the biggest, burliest kid in the neighborhood. You know, hey, let's get Tiny and play softball. And then Tiny would be like 6 feet tall, 180 pounds, and 11 years old. Where did you get the name Little Steven from?
Well, my heroes all seem to be named Little. You know, my favorite, the man I consider to be the king of rock and roll, the man who I feel invented it, was a guy named Little Richard,
mm-hmm.
Who also happened to be the preacher at my wedding.
Really?
And yeah.
And who was the band at your wedding?
The band at my wedding was Percy
Green?
Sledge.
Percy Sledge. That's
Percy
not bad.
Sledge sang "When a Man Loves a Woman" when we walked down the aisle, and we also had we had three bands. We had them. We had the band from The Godfather, who you know, at the Godfather wedding. those guys, and then we had Little Milton was also there. But you know, then my favorite, you know, harmonica player, my favorite blues guy is a guy named Little Walter, which is where we stole the name The Jukes. His band was Little Walter and The Jukes, and we stole that for Southside John and the Asbury Jukes.
Right.
And you know, and the first record I ever bought was Little Anthony. So, you know, these littles just pop up all over the place.
Okay.
It was, you know.
Well, now you know, you talked about how the kind of rock and roll that you're sort of, you know, proselytizing for on the airwaves these days. A lot of reverence for the 50s and 60s. I think part of the appeal of Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, the E Street Band, was this image of just a bunch of regular guys. You know, you weren't trashing hotel rooms or snorting coke off the belly of a supermodel. I mean, maybe you were, but we didn't know about it, you know? It just seemed like you were more into hanging out and drinking beer and stuff like that, watching football. You know, is it all wrapped up? Is it all of a piece, the people making the music and the type of music that they make?
Well, some of that is true. I mean, in the sense that I think that had to do more with us achieving success rather late in life, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, when you're 17, 18, 19 and you get successful, you know, the supermodel and drug thing tends to be a little more, you know, inviting. But, you know, we didn't really have any success till our late 20s. And by then, you kind of know who you are.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, we also came from a tradition, though, of the band not being exactly looking or dressing like the audience. You know, I mean, we came from either the R&B tradition of dressing up, you know, in suits or whatever, or the rock and roll tradition of just having just, you know, cool clothes and an image and an identity. I mean, there was a very, very big connection between the fashion world and rock and roll of the 60s. So we kind of come from that tradition as well. Bruce, on his own, sort of reinvented the regular guy look, I think. You know,
yeah, yeah.
There's a few guys of that in that sort of tradition.
How about you in the bandana?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, my thing wasn't exactly the regular guy.
No, it wasn't.
Thing, you know. But you know, Bruce is coming from that sort of, you know, whatever. He ended up, you know, going through a bunch of changes, but basically he ended up, I think, embodying that sort of regular guy thing you were describing before. That kind of came from John Fogerty or even Neil Young. You know, but you know, that's not exactly my thing. You know, my thing is a bit more traditional in the sense of the band, I always feel, should be different than the audience and something that the audience looks up to and aspires to be and is inspired by and motivated by, or else why come to the show? You know what I mean? I mean, you know, come to the show, let's give them a show, let's let them see things that they're not going to see at home,
right?
You know, on a video, or, you know, so.
Well, what they can see at home is Monday Night Football, and you, little Steven Van Zandt, have put together an all-star band to back Hank Williams Jr. On the new version of "All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over Tonight." What was the job here? What was your brief in putting this together?
Well, basically, it was Hank wants to rock, you know? And I was like, okay, I can do that. I actually knew Hank. Hank opened what was the first artist actually to play on my Outlaw Country channel on Sirius Satellite Radio. He played at the opening party, which Jesse Coulter staged out in Arizona. So I knew Hank from there, and, you know, we get along good. And, you know, he just wanted to, you know, I think through the years, even though the song has become an institution in its own way, I think you sort of started to get this image of Hank as against a blue screen and kind of, you know what I mean, kind of separate from actually being a rock, you know, a rock and country guy. And he's a real thing. I mean, he's not one of those showbiz guys. He's not one of those sort of some icon that, you know, sort of is symbolic. I mean, he really does rock, and he can rock in the rock world or the country world either way. But
or on TV on Monday Night Football. So let's give people a chance to hear, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, Steven, and we'll talk with you a bit more. My guest is little Steven Van Zandt. He's these days hosting Little Steven's Underground Garage in between Sopranos gigs and all the other stuff he does. And here's his music for Monday Night Football on Soundcheck. We're talking to little Steven Van Zandt about his long love affair with good old rock and roll. This is Steven and a duet with Bruce Springsteen called Native American. Steven, you mentioned you and Bruce had, you know, you go way back. I mean, basically boyhood friends and stuff. Are you guys, you know, I know you left the E Street Band like in the early 80s, and then he ended up splitting with the band entirely in the late 80s before coming together in the 90s again. Are you guys still friends, or is it more of a, you know, just kind of a professional relationship these days?
No. We are actually very close friends and have been for 40 years. My God. you know, we talk all the time, and you know, it was nice to actually come back into the, you know, have the band reunite. I guess it was 99.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stay together now. I mean, I expect us to make another record and go back on tour, possibly as early as 07, but we'll see. But My filming, The Sopranos wraps in March, our final 8 shows, and at that point I'll be available if we decide to do that. But
Will you be permanently available? Or?
Well, you know, it's the final 8 shows. Now, whether it's the final 8 shows for Silvio, we will have to see.
Okay. Is this one of those deals where they shoot multiple endings and you don't know how the thing's going to end yourself?
Well, we'll see. I mean, we're only on show number 3 right now, so that very well may be the case.
In the role of Silvio, you have traded one bit of headgear, the bandana, for another, which is this big puffy pompadour thing that you wear on your head as Silvio Dante.
Be respectful now.
How did that happen? Did they just look at you and say, "Now that is the quintessential New Jersey guy"? Is that what happened?
Well, kind of. Yeah. I mean, as far as the actual identity of that character, or just getting me into the show,
you're getting the gig.
Oh, getting the gig. Okay. David Chase, the creator, is a big music fan, and he, you know, he actually not only has E Street Band records, he has my solo records, which means he's a fanatic. You know, I mean, you gotta be a record collector to have my records. And he saw me one day on TV inducting the Rascals in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you know, I did a little comedy bit, you know, a 3-minute, 4-minute thing, and he just, you know. He thought this guy might be, you know, it might be interesting because he wanted new faces. You know, he wanted to he was doing this new TV show, and he just wanted to do something different. He'd been in TV his whole life, and I think he felt this was his, you know, if he's gonna take a one last shot at doing something that he really wants to do rather than working for somebody else. So he created this Sopranos show and called me, and you know. Said, "Do you want to be in it?" You know, and it really was as simple as that.
Must have been intimidating, though. I mean, first time actor on a set with people like, you know, Gandolfini and all the rest.
Well, I didn't quite think about that at that moment. All I thought about was, you know, this was 96, 97. I kind of had just gotten out of music. I wasn't really interested in music anymore. I hadn't discovered the contemporary garage rock scene yet. Which would be a revelation to me, mm-hmm. all these young bands playing music that reflected the 50s and 60s, and my desire to support that led to the radio show. But that wouldn't happen for another 6 months or so. So, you know, when he called, I said, well, maybe music's over and maybe I'll be an actor now. You know, what the hell? So I went down there and I took it very seriously. Once I got the job, I wrote a whole biography of the character and I created the look of the character and decided that the character very much was a man that, you know, respected the past and felt that the best days of the mob were gone, and he's a real traditionalist. And
so you were an activist even in character.
In a way, yeah. I mean, he had a very identifiable sort of a point of view. And so making him look like that point of view was easy, and so that's why his sensibility stopped somewhere around 1959, so that's what I wanted him to look like, you know.
All right. My guest is Little Steven Van Zandt, Silvio Dante on The Sopranos, and also the man behind Little Steven's Underground Garage, where the musical sensibility very much reflects 1959, 1969, and on. You mentioned you got out of, you know, the political stuff. I mean, you were really very successful in the whole Sun City Project back in the early 80s in raising awareness about apartheid and stuff. And it seemed like, you know, even then, musicians really could sway public opinion and affect change. Do you think those days are gone?
Well, no. I think we achieved what I was hoping we would achieve, which was to make politics a little bit more of a normal occurrence, more of a, you know, integrate it a little bit more into one's everyday, you know, life, rather than these big events that would happen every couple of years.
Right.
I was trying to politicize everybody I came in contact with, and I think, you know, I think that was pretty successful at the time. And we were. I mean, Sun City was the first time we walked across that line from social concerns to political concerns, and
right.
you know, we named names, and we were very, very active, and as you say, very, very successful. We'll never see that kind of success again, I don't think, in terms of the you know, bringing a bad government down strictly on a moral basis. You know, I mean, that was an unusual, clear-cut victory.
Yeah.
But I think it influenced a lot of people in a good way.
Well, know? And there are other battles to fight, and you mentioned one of them is getting good old-fashioned rock and roll back on the airwaves, which Little Steven is now doing in over 200 markets and with a number of streams running on satellite radio. It's on Sirius.
And yes, on Sirius, and locally Q104 FM, Sunday nights at 10.
From 10 to midnight. And the tour, the national tour, is coming here, Irving Plaza, Thursday night. Details on all of this are on our website, the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. My guest is Little Steven Van Zandt. Steven, a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for being with us today.
You too, John. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.